Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. And we welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports to the program on our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, how we doing? What's going on?
What's going on, gents? Uneventful, yeah.
Yep, not a
whole lot. Boring week.
Not a whole lot happening this week.
A lot of downtime, a lot of dull moments in Titans.
Oh, yes.
Base.
Hockey started.
That's true. It did. Preds off to a 2-1-1 start. Good for them. Charles, I was listening to you on Inside Coverage the other day, and you and Siciliano and Frank Schwab spent a lot of time on obviously what happened to Brian Callahan and just the whole mess surrounding the Titans this week. I just want to start here. I mean, Amy Adams Strunk is just getting crushed around the league this week. I mean, people put up the timeline. And it's like, oh, you fired people 4 years in a row here.
Right.
What do you make of – I mean, yeah, we've talked with you about how we gotten to this point, but this job now with her leading the way and her being the, you know, as you put it, the first of the three kind of main pillars you look at a franchise.
Right.
How detrimental do you think that is for them right now?
I mean, look, it's funny, you know, when you have a press conference after you fire a coach and then, you know, the leadership that's left behind says they think it's an attractive job. And, you know, I would just challenge it. I would say that it's attractive in the way that there's just not a lot out there. I think that's one of the things that, you know, Frank Schwab said, hey, it's always one of 32. And he's right about that. But, you know, anytime you talk about particularly – candidates who have the right to be choosy, you know, and I think this was the point that I made on the show. I said, you know, the first thing they do is they go to, you know, they say, okay, what are the three pillars? It's the owner, it's the general manager, and it's the quarterback. And they look at that kind of hierarchy and always, you know, the owner's that's the one where you don't want to make the mistake because, you know, you get an owner that's sort of listless, and we know who they are across the league. And we've you know, kind of taken people to task, you know, the David Teppers of the world. And, you know, we're talking about different reasons why they're not good owners, but, you know, the Dan Snyders and, you know, Arthur Blank at times, I mean, there's been different owners that we've had, you know, issues with, but, anytime you can throw up a chart and you look at the number of firings that have occurred in a short period of time. And then not only that, not just the firings, but sort of the disjointed way where it's noticeable that like Rand Carthon is part of hiring Chad, you know, Brinker. And then Brinker is part of firing Rand Carthon later. You know, it's never something that reflects well in the organization. And then also, is the owner present when it comes time to take responsibility for the turnover in the franchise and then, you know, set the mission. And I don't want to say like, you know, we also talk, I don't want to say it, talk out of both sides of my mouth about the owner's involvement, because at times we'll say, well, geez, it's a big plus when the owner gets out of the way and sort of lets the football people do what they're going to do and doesn't have a significant amount of interference. But there's a line there, right, where it's just like, okay, you know, they get out of the way, but then total absentia in repeated turnover and firings. And I think, you know, Amy kind of falls in that category when you're going to have people looking at this job. They're going to say, why are so many people getting fired here? Why are there so many power struggles within the organization? Why are, you know, and it's funny because I feel like there was pushback against this you know, not that long ago. Why are quality individuals losing their jobs? And again, I will argue, and I argued then, and I'll argue it now. Mike Vrabel was a quality coach when he lost his job, you know, with the Tennessee Titans, and it may not have been working at that time, and I get it, but still, I mean, that goes on your record when he leaves and goes elsewhere and has success, even if it hasn't been sustained, you know, over a long period of time at this point. It doesn't look good, obviously, for the owner. So, again, I would just push back on this idea that, you know, yeah, it's an attractive job. Yeah, you know, it's an attractive job to someone who doesn't have a ton of choices. But I think if it's, I think if you have individuals who are able to count the Titans amongst an opportunity, but they have other opportunities on the table, there's reasons to slide the Titans down that ranking. And we've seen that play out. We've talked about that on the show. It was a big part of that press conference, you know, Amy not being present for it. And other people noticed that, you know, across the league. And, you know, I think I texted with you guys where some of these things, particularly for organizations, when they're not flush with cash, there's not a ton of cash. I think in the Titans organization, the same way you look at the Raiders and, you know, some other owners out there where they just don't have just this massive, you know, net worth. When you start firing people over and over and over in a short period of time, and I'm telling you, or you're building a stadium in that period of time, you'll start to hear inside the organization from people like, hey man, we're cutting things. like more morale's not great. Like things are getting tight. Like I remember with the Rams, you know, the Inglewood Stadium, that project like spiraled and went insane. You know, it went from like $3 billion.
That dude has $400 billion, doesn't
right?
he?
And that guy has a ton of cash, right? And then with the Rams, and it happened with the Raiders too, you started to hear like, man, we're cutting things, you know. Man, we're getting nickel and dimed, you know, left and right inside the team. And we're working out of portables, or we're doing this, or, hey, the per diem's gone, or now they're, you know, the pension's an issue. And what struck me was, man, you don't realize that, like, when there's a stadium squeeze or you have an organization that's constantly paying out buyouts like the Raiders – you start to hear from the rank and file inside buildings who are going, money's getting tight here, and it's morale's not great. Like, this sucks. The turnover sucks, and they're starting to, you know, just employees are getting pinched for things. I'm just telling you, I'd keep your ear to the ground in terms of the Titans and question, what else is getting cut now that you're constantly paying all these buyouts? You're dealing with a stadium project. I know Amy's not. Again, she's not one of these owners out there that has a ton of cash. It reminds me a lot of the Raiders situation and the morale inside the building just diving because of the firings. And then, you know, you try to save money, you know, where you can. And then you just get everyday people inside your building who start to get squeezed for money. There's other things that come up beyond just, you know, firing Brian Callahan. It's wild because I never knew it happened until I watched it occur in multiple different organizations. But these buyouts, when they stack up on top of each other, particularly when they overlap with a stadium build, the money, it's not endless, right? It's not just a tree in the back where she can go and, you know, she's got to cut corners, you know, in some spaces when you don't just have an endless stream of revenue. So there's a lot going on. I'm just telling you right now.
So
it stretches beyond just what's in front of our face.
Okay, so give me your power rankings. You know, in the NFL, in the view of the NFL, what owners in this league are deemed worse than Amy Adams Strunk at this point? Anyone?
Yeah, I would still say, look at
Tepper's still winning out. You still got to give Tepper his due.
I still think a Tepper, you know, when you have now again inside Carolina, this is what's always funny is when I talk to people inside Carolina, all they do is defend David Tepper. You know, it's, you know, what a great guy he is. Oh, he's not as bad as everybody makes him out to be. You know, and then yet, anytime someone gets fired in that organization and they come out and you talk to them and you sort of have the debriefing, it's always about these referendums where he's like setting timelines where it's like, you have 2 years to do this. You have 3 years to do this. And then that timeline never, you know, is realized. Like it's, you'll hear stories about, well, we were given 3 years to do this. And then I get fired a year and a half in. Now here's the crazy thing about the Titans. If I were to say anything about Brian Callahan, and I'm not here to make a big defense of Brian Callahan. The record's the record. Coaches know the deal. And, you know, they understand in some way, shape, or form, no matter how much it hurts, they understand that results are the thing that you know, keep you in place. That said, I guarantee you, if you go back into the offseason and, you know, Mike Borgonzi gets hired, if you go back and kind of look at the supportive statements of Brian Callahan as a head coach, if there's anything Brian Callahan can stand on at this point, he can point and say, you know, I had six games with a rookie quarterback. Like, was I going to get more than six games? Like, that's it. I got six games. And again, I'm not defending Brian Callahan here because I do agree with the idea of growth. And, you know, I saw it from week to week. It's not like the three of us, you know, between Joe, Robbie, and myself, it's not like we didn't talk other times off the air about sort of what was going on, what we were seeing. But it is six games. And there is, you know, there's something to be said about when you draft a quarterback number one overall and it's coming into an organization where there are clearly a litany of problems coming out of the previous season. It doesn't look good to outside candidates if we want to steer it away from Brian and not. I know there's a lot of people probably right now pulling their hair out going, you know, don't defend Brian Callahan. But other candidates are going to sit there and go, man, that's not a lot. That's not a lot of runway, especially when all the positive there. And there were, I had to go back and look. I was like, wow, yeah, there were some positive, you know, supporting statements of Brian and the idea of patience this season. And six games is not a lot. It's not for anybody. I mean, even with the lack of growth, and I think there were other things that went into it. You know, Simmons kind of saying the thing about practice, which I was
– yeah, not knowing the rules. I mean, there was some stuff.
Yeah, yeah, right. You're right. And we talked about that. And I, you know, I said, hey, you know, it's not a one-to-one Nathaniel Hackett, but there were moments where I'm like, you know, come on. This guy's got to be a little better than this. I get it. I understand maybe why you feel like you need to do that, but it does not change how it gets reflected on outside the organization. I don't know that Amy's seen as the worst owner in the league, but definitely the lack of presence. I mean, I had people, it was interesting when the press conference was going on with Brinker and Borgonzi, but people were like, man, like the owners can hammer you. Like, this is really, and I was like, hey, this isn't new. I was like, I know you don't pay attention to the Titans, but I was like, this is not a new thing. Like, this is something that's been questioned for a long time about the sort of lack of accountability because of all the change. And it was interesting. One executive I was texting with said to me, well, you know, there are other owners that are not, you know, necessarily present like this. And I said, yeah, but the difference is, and I think this matters, the amount of turnover that's happened in a short period of time. And at some point in that period, you can't just go through your team website to sit down and have a conversation with your fan base. You have to step out. I think you have to make yourself accountable and available to the people who cover this team on a regular basis and set the vision. Otherwise, you're like, yeah, I'm just going to keep hiring and firing people and telling those people to say what the vision is and really never, you know, standing up and taking accountability myself. And by the way, you're building a stadium. You're like asking people to pay for PSLs. You're taking public money, you know, to actually build a stadium. Sort of an important time, I think, to be, you know, there and count it amongst the individuals who are taking questions. So for the team that the Titans are, and what I mean by that is, like, it's, you're not in New York, and I don't mean to diminish like Nashville in any way or Tennessee in any way, but you're not in New York where I feel like, you know, the teams are always under fire. The quarterbacks are always under fire. You know, Chicago's that way. Philly can be that way. It's not one of those. It's very similar to Houston where it's like, you can get by for a while, kind of not being great in terms of an owner or a coach or whatever. You're not getting hammered nonstop. The Titans really have stuck out like a sore thumb for not being in one of those markets in terms of the issues they've had with hirings and firings and the lack of accountability from an owner.
So now they've got, you know, assuming there's not some magical run here from Mike McCoy as the interim head coach, a coaching search that's going to be coming up. So how do you, if you're the Titans and you're Brinker and Borgonzi that are going to be in charge of hiring the next coach here, what are you looking for? How do you handle it? And how How much do you think, and I know some Titans fans, you know, kind of shake their head at this, but I'm just telling you, like, how much do you think an Arthur Smith or a Jim Schwartz or both may be more involved in this than people think just because of their history and dealing with the owner?
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on how, what difficulties maybe you have, because a job like this, considering with the owner, you know, I will tell you, like, let's say the Bill Polians of the world, like people, the old heads in the NFL who get leaned upon when someone comes up for, you know, they show up on coaching lists or whatever. Typically what happens is they reach out to, or they lean upon those who have come before them who can offer some element of advice. And I will tell you right now, the old heads will always say, don't go near that situation. Like you might only have one shot to be a head coach here, which is probably advice that Brian Callahan got. Like, you got one shot. And if this goes really horribly for you, you'll be a coordinator for the rest of your career, or you'll end up being a quarterback's coach. You'll have to claw your way back to being a coordinator, and then you'll never be a head coach ever again. I covered, you know, Marty Morningway in Detroit, right? And it was like,
oh yeah,
that went horribly. You were like, when he was gone, you're like, he'll never be back. Like, in terms of the head coaching ranks, he'll never be on those lists ever again. Brian Callahan might be, you know, one of those guys. And so when that happens, it leaves a mark. And then the people who remain in place, when they're putting lists together, you have to deal with lists of candidates who are leaning on other individuals who are, you know, again, the Bill Polians or whoever they're getting advice from, who are saying, don't go near Tennessee. You don't want to deal with that. You have an owner who's not present when it comes time to take responsibility for the turnstile aspect of some of the job postings. You have multiple firings, which is nerve-wracking in and of itself. They're at all levels of the organization. It's not like it's just the coach. It's not like it's just isolated general manager. It's touched both positions. So what usually happens in situations like that, when candidate lists form, it becomes, okay, you're not getting the top one or two, individuals on a list. So you'll get a coordinator. You'll get someone who, as Frank Schwab would say on the podcast that we have, who sits there and says, look, if I get an opportunity, it's one of 32, and that's what matters to me. Not, hey, let me be picky and choosy and maybe pass. You're not going to get Ben Johnson, who's going to have a chance to take the Washington job and goes, nope, I think I'll sit back and wait one more year. I'm good where I'm at in Detroit. And then, you know, there will be other opportunities for me a year later. You don't necessarily get those individuals. So, you know, Joe Brady, I mean, it's sort of, you're like, okay, how hot is Joe Brady? You know, I know Cliff Kingsbury gets mentioned, and it's like, well, is Cliff sitting there going, how many other opportunities am I going to have? Is sort of it. Mike McCarthy takes the gap year after the Dallas, after losing his job in Dallas, and the same situation where Mike's like, you know, how many more of these are going to come down the turnpike? And I think why, Robbie, as you mentioned, you know, Arthur Smith gets mentioned, Jim Schwartz gets mentioned, what ends up bridging that gap for some of these candidates is, you know, well, I already know the owner. I've already dealt with the owner. I've been inside the organization, and I kind of know how things operate there. I would argue Schwartz is getting to the point where he's going to get another shot, and it might be, I don't see it being like, any other shots beyond that. It's like, hey, he's toiled long enough since the Lions job and built himself up, and he's going to get a second shot at this. I don't know if there's going to be another one after that. So you wonder if he has to be picky and choosy. I think Arthur Smith is sort of the same way. If he gets another shot, I don't know how many more come after that. And so even those guys with owner familiarity, they have to sit and think about this sort of long and hard, but they do have some institutional knowledge about what it's like to be in Tennessee. A Jesse Minner, Jesse Minner's very hot right now. And if you're Jesse Minner, you're probably sitting there saying, you know what? I don't think this is my last bite at the apple. I got time to sit here and be, you know, picky and choosy and think about it. So it's complicated for the Titans, and it'll be interesting to see how, you know, Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi are able to navigate how this goes. Like Clint Kubiak's another one where a lot of people have a really high opinion of the Seahawks offensive coordinator, who he's worked with, the scheme he runs. I don't think Clint Kubiak is like, yeah, Tennessee, that's the place I want to go. And I will side with them on this. I don't think it's totally unattractive job, because I do think that there's a high opinion of, you know, the skill set of Cam Ward. I do think there is some talent on the roster, but I do also believe that the Titans are looked at as more of, from the outside looking in, as more of a, honestly, a reboot. Like, I feel bad for fans saying that because of how much capital has gotten spent, you know, to get the roster where it is right now. But I don't know that people look at the Titans and say, yeah, let's just add the right coach and a couple individuals and that'll turn quickly. And it's not a matter of, you know, retooling some parts of the roster, which is why I thought it was interesting that they're clearly pressing the idea out there that Jeffrey Simmons is not someone who's going to be available. I would just remind people, that's what you do to get the top capital you can for a player. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, like I, you know, so.
Okay, so quick hitters on some of these dreamy kind of scenarios that we've talked about this week, which is good coaches we know are good coaches who maybe could be on the market. Okay, so I'm going to just throw these at you. Just hit them one by one. Kevin Stefanski, Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh. Who else, Robbie? Those are the big three, right?
Yeah.
Those three. Yeah. And throw this in, too. Is Robert Saleh a viable head coaching candidate in the NFL because he was at the Jets and we shouldn't blame him for that?
Right.
Or did he do enough stuff there that actually he's somewhat radioactive?
Yeah, no, I think Saleh I think there's a general agreement that the Jets are just so screwed up that it actually ends up kind of being a good thing for Saleh. I believe that. I think that Saleh's reputation has rebounded, particularly considering, you know, what he's dealt with in terms of the injury situation in San Francisco. I think people understand, and I will also say it's been supported by other individuals who have come out of the Jets organization. I feel like everybody who has come out of the Jets has said, and they've told anybody who will listen, it is so messed up in there. They're like, it is, you don't hold what you saw in front of your eyes as the hard and fast just truth about people who tried to operate inside that organization. And I think that will help Saleh, you know, and I do think obviously his performance since he's gotten out has helped him, but I also think people realize, like, we've seen people come out of there and they've been okay, and that's more about maybe the owner and things that have happened that are beyond the control of, say, a general manager, a team president, a head coach, a quarterback. I mean, literally, like, Aaron Rodgers gets out and he's like, I'm free. Yeah. You know, and he looks better. He looks happy. You know, everybody who leaves is like, I mean – I will tell you this. It's uncommon to see people fired from massive jobs and then talk to them and think like, wow, worst day of their lives, and have them go, I am so relieved. Like they wanted to be, like they just wanted to get out. Like their soul was being crushed inside the organization and now they're unemployed. Now, granted, they're getting paid.
Yeah.
The buyout.
Getting paid a lot
but
to
still,
not work.
Yeah. But still they're like, I'm just glad to not be there anymore. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. These are big jobs that people are talking about. And I heard that from more than one person who got out of that situation. So I do think Saleh's rebound a little bit. When you talk about the other head coaches, ownership doesn't want to fire Mike Tomlin. Okay. So, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers fans have wanted to fire Mike Tomlin far more than ownership has wanted to. I think the Ravens, it's sort of the same situation. Like it's a little bit comical where, you know, the whole fire Harbaugh chance happened and you're like, okay, like he's had a ton of regular season success. He's had some postseason success. Do you want to fire Lamar too? Because Lamar's playoff record, like is, and the way that he's played at times in the playoffs has not matched up, and you're going to put this all on Harbaugh. So those two situations, I shrugged. And if it happened, to me, it would be similar to Mike Vrabel getting fired in Tennessee, where I'd be like, yeah, you know, you fired a good coach. Like, they're going to end up in another organization, and you're going to kind of regret it. So if they were to come available, yeah, I think that would be great for Tennessee. I don't know that either would go to Tennessee, to be honest with you. Sorry, fans.
Fair.
And then Stefanski is interesting. Like, somebody asked me, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, they said, hey, is Kevin on the hot seat? And I said, no, no way. I said, he and Andrew Berry, I said, they're good. They're on lock. Then they traded Flacco. And Stefanski comes out, and I'll never forget listening to that press conference. And I was texting the guys, I'm like, you listening to us right now? Like, and he put it on Andrew. Like, he was like, look, you know, I trust Andrew. It's like he kept saying it like over and over again. And I'm like, yeah, I know Kevin did not want to create an environment where he had this veteran quarterback and who he wanted to continue starting. But at the very least, if he wasn't going to start him and he had a rookie starting, he wanted to make sure he had the veteran in the number two position, the support role. And then now that guy's playing for the Bengals. And, you know, you could tell, I'm like, this feels like there's a tiny bit of separation now between the head coach and the general manager. And since that press conference, I'm kind of like, yeah, this feels different. You know, this feels like Kevin's, there's a little bit of a gap there. And someone said to me, they go, you know what? They're like, Kevin's going to be just like Baker. He's going to leave Cleveland, and he's going to go off.
I think we may have lost Charles for a second.
All right, well, timed out. Sorry, Charles. Sorry. He's
no,
back.
No, I fat-cheeked it. I fat-cheeked it.
Okay.
Sorry. I fat-cheeked it. No, I was just saying, like, someone mentioned to me when it looked like there was some gap between Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, they said, like, he's going to end up being like Baker Mayfield. He's going to leave the organization. He's going to do great. And they're going to say the same thing you're saying about Baker. Sometimes you just need to get away from, you know, the dysfunction to be what you can be. I think Stefanski's a really good coach. I think Cleveland fans hate him. I think they can't stand him. I think they think he runs a vanilla offense. I think he's been a horrible situation from a quarterback standpoint since he's been there. And even when the Baker situation was good, you saw what he could do. And then Baker gets hurt, and then there's other elements of like OBJ being on there and all the drama that was sort of happening then. Stefanski's the one where I'm like, he could become available, and I think he could go elsewhere and do well. And like, if you ask me out of that group who could end up in Tennessee, I mean, maybe Stefanski could. But I also think Stefanski knows if I get another shot after Cleveland, it's better be a good one, because I can't suffer this twice. I can't go into two bad organizations twice with, in terms of like the ownership and like what the sum of the parts end up being. So I'm sure he would be pretty reticent. I hate this.
Good news, Titans fans.
Yeah. I mean, I want to tell Titans fans, hey, you're going to go out there and you're going to get the best candidate, but you're not going to pay them the most money. Right. Which is, you know, yeah, go get a top candidate. You can overpay, right. You can throw it like, Sean Payton's out there. You throw a ton of money and go, we're going to pay you $20 million a season. Then maybe you get a guy. And you're not going to get someone who has a bunch of options on their plate. I just don't see it. And I would ask you guys, tell me what you sell. Tell me what you sell. What do you sell?
I mean, I would say Ward, but he's got to play a whole lot better than he's played so far.
Sure. Okay. So, you know, you have 6 games of subpar performance from the number one pick in the draft.
Right.
And oh, by the way, Robbie, when you come in, you got to make that guy right.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have to make him right. So that's a lot of pressure coming in, right, off the rip. And you didn't draft him, right? It wasn't your choice, but you got to come in and make him right. I brought up Sean McVay, you know, in the past where he had to go in and make Jared Goff right, you know, so there's – but – I don't know. L.A. had a lot to throw at McVay.
Yeah. No doubt.
He was also like 15 years old when he got that job. This is a lot. We should have done an hour today.
I was going to say, we could have spent a lot of time with you today. A lot of stuff going on. We didn't even get to the Vrabel coming back, which is just that'll be fun.
We can talk about him next week.
That'll be fun. Sunday.
Real quick, I know you got to get out of here, but I will just tell you my first Mike Vrabel reaction, my first Mike Vrabel interaction that sums up Mike Vrabel in my mind. Remember, he was here in Houston. And he and I would, like, we knew the same bar. And so, so he's like, oh, he's like, I go to this bar. It was called Shepherd Park, like, Drive or whatever. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, it's right around the corner from my house. Like, everything's going great or whatever. And then I said to him, I said, hey, you know, I went to Michigan State. I said, you know, you're an Ohio State guy. I said, hey, we can both hate Michigan together. He goes, I can't kid you not. He turns to me and he goes, I don't give a bleep about that. Like, walks away. That was it. We were having this great conversation. He literally just as disgusted as he could be. I don't give a bleep about that. And then walks
away. Thank you, Mike.
Like, well, that's it.
God, wow. Lighten up, Vrabel. Jeez, go take a puff of your Marlboro Light and shut up.
Dude, and we were sailing. Like, it was such a great conversation. I was like, wow, this is going great. Ruined
and
it.
And then it came
immediately
to halt.
Ruined it.
Immediately comes to a halt. Charles, thank you, sir. We will talk to you next week about what's going to be an interesting game here on Sunday.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Probably a day where we could have gone all 3 hours with Charles. Lots
yeah.
Stuff to talk to.
Yeah. Some people mad at him about saying, like Thomas from Hendersonville saying, I think he called him a moron because he said that this is not an attractive job. There's other people saying otherwise. I would ask this.
What do you guys think is attractive about this job, other than it's one of 32?
That's it. There's two things. One, look, you're not going to have to go too low because it's an NFL coaching job.
Right.
It's just the question of, okay, are you going to get your first, second, or third choice, and are other teams going to take those? And I think they'd be in a bad spot. But then also Cam Ward. If a particular coach says, I don't care what the numbers say, I've watched him.
I think Cam Ward is way more attractive of an option than the actual general NFL public thinks.
Right, but that is in the eye of the beholder, right?
Yes,
of a particular
it is. But,
coach.
I think there's this assumption out there. Oh, they got Cam Ward. Well, so far Cam Ward's been bad.
Yeah.
So like Cam Ward.
So far it hasn't.
Depending
helped
on who
that.
You ask. Like, there are probably some coaches out there that will love working with Cam Ward and that think he's really has a chance to be really good. I mean, it's also not like Cam Ward was, like, universally viewed in the draft process either as this can't-miss guy. There are plenty of people in the draft right. process that said they wouldn't take him at number one overall and didn't think he's going to be very good. So, like, I think the assumption that Cam Ward is here and that makes the job attractive is way too widespread out there. There
yeah.
are plenty of people around the league that would not consider that to be a positive.
Right. Yeah, and look, it's I guess, well, I don't know. Is it better? It's like it's at least a young quarterback with talent, so, you know, that should help you. Again, some coaches might be like, oh, no, I didn't like him at all, and I just don't think he's got it. It's in the eye of the beholder. But I guess it's, you know, there's the alternative is like a place that just has no quarterback answer, but then again, then it's like
you get to
dictate that.
Yeah,
so – No, look, let me be clear. It's going to be near the bottom of whatever jobs are open. It's going to be near the bottom of the list, if not at the bottom of the list.
And let me be clear. Like, I'm not giving up on Cam Ward. I still think Cam Ward's got a chance to be good,
right.
And Cam Ward would excite me if I was a coach with the tools that he's got to work. But I think that there are too many people assuming that, like, everybody believes that Cam Ward is just, like, some dude out there. And that's not the case. Like, we saw that in the draft process. And by the way, he's been pretty bad through six games. And you can blame it on whatever you want to blame it on. But the bottom line is, like, he got to play better as the year goes on to justify some of that.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, I do think that we talk about right now, what is the attractiveness right now? Okay, well, if you tell me they win, like, three games, four games from here, which screws over the number one pick probably, but because Cam Ward plays well and you're seeing it more, well, then it can look better. I mean, that's – yeah, like Vrabel, I know it's like the Patriots, so, oh, going back home and all that stuff. But
yeah.
I don't think there's any question that Drake May was a big part of that being attractive to him. And if they didn't have that going on, then he might have said, you know what, I had a great time playing for the Patriots, but I'm going to this job with a better situation, just
right.
like he wanted the Chargers job that Harbaugh got over him. And, I mean, like, if Vrabel's sitting there like, I don't give a crap about Michigan, then why does he care that he played for the Patriots, you know?
Right.
He just went to a good job. It was attractive because of the quarterback. But, yeah, I think this job can look better by the end of the season.
I agree.
But we'll see. A full-on rebuild. It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
And if you're a coach and you need some time or patience to turn things around, this is not the ideal place.
Right.
They talk patience, but they don't show it.
Yeah.
So
because that's the thing.
That has to make you hesitant.
And some of it, I really think, by the way, has to do with what is the feeling of the coaching community and within the league about Brian Callahan.
Yeah.
We watched all this stuff happen this year. It was inexcusable, the rule stuff and some of the presser stuff, changing the story, all that stuff. But do people respect him and think, that guy actually has a clue and look at how he got treated? Or is it like I don't think people held like the Hackett thing against the Broncos, right? It was like, oh, yeah, you just had to do it. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think people look closely. It's hard to defend Callahan, but some in the coaching community may feel differently. I don't know.
615-737-1025, our phone number. One more segment coming up. A lot of your thoughts to get to. We will do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. This Sunday, the NFL Game of the Week, Commanders taking on the Cowboys at 325 on 94.9 The Fan. NFL Game of the Week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Massaro in 12 South. Also, check out our College Football Game of the Week on Saturday. Oklahoma and South Carolina at 11:45 a.m. on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Circa Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Final thoughts for the day. Like we said, we got a busy weekend coming up around here. We got Tennessee, Alabama, Vanderbilt, LSU, Vrabel coming back to town, so we got a lot to get into on the program here tomorrow, though. But a lot of reaction from Charles. Not calling the Titans a very attractive job. It was interesting that he mentioned the Stefanski part of this. Is keep an eye on that one moving forward here.
Yeah, and I think he's good. I think he's a good coach. It would not be the same level of excitement to me a Tomlin or a Harbaugh.
No.
But I think he's a good coach. And again, but if you're a Titans fan, you want as much of these things to happen as possible. Obviously, just so the pool of candidates is great, and you want some of these teams, teams where you don't have an attractive candidate to maybe hold on to their coach. You want as little competition as possible for the job. Chris in Nashville says, high draft pick and cap space, plus if you win six games in year one, great job. You buy when the market is lowest. I get that. But first of all, the cap space, all right. Are the Titans going to utilize that?
And again, it's free agency in the NFL. There's not a ton out there.
Right.
We've talked about this before, but your positions of need in the NFL, like your receivers, high-level receivers, your high-level edge rushers, your high-level cornerbacks,
tackles,
those guys don't typically make it to free agency.
Yeah, you have to draft well. But, still, if you can get into some bidding wars, you have to do a lot. You have to do a lot in both. But I hear that, but I think that if you weigh everything together, it's not an attractive job relative to other jobs in the NFL. Robbie, I do want to make sure, I know people have been waiting on this since the beginning of the show. I apologize to Alex Doherty. It was not him who did the onions. It was Adam Vingan. Adam Vingan, you're on the bleep list. Next time you get a sub, eat the sub. Don't throw onions in a trash can. It still
Pretty
stinks
simple.
In here.
Yeah.
So... Sorry,
Our apologies to Alex.
Our apologies to Alex.
Yes, we apologize.
There we go. Just wanted to get that on the record. Where do we go from there? I don't know.
It's a good question.
There
nice.
We go.
Oh,
hey.
Look at there.
Oldie there's but a goodie right there.
There's a throwback right there.
Yeah.
I like that stuff.
Richard Snyder on the YouTube chat says, after listening to all this, it might take a decade to fix this mess. That is one thing, and even Ian said earlier, but I will say, Robbie, 10 years ago, it is amazing how it's lining up. It's 10 years ago, Titans looked hopeless.
They go in cycles.
They had this interim coach named Mike, who everybody's whatever. They just fired the coach. Everybody knew they had to get fired. Ownership was a mess. So what'd they do? They drafted a very good right tackle. They traded nothing for a very good running back. They drafted a future Hall of Fame running back, drafted a future All-Pro safety. And they had what you think was a terrible quarterback, but a decent second-year quarterback, and they went from terrible to a 9-17 that should have won the division in 1 year.
Yeah.
This can't – Now, did they have more talent? They had like guys like Arakpo and Jarrell Casey and
Delanie Walker,
Derek Morgan, Delanie Walker. They had more talent that was ready to win than this team does. But it can go it can go real fast from terrible to okay in the NFL.
It can.
Happens all
and
the time.
And it should. Which is why this prolonged period we're in right now
is pretty bad.
A tough one to stomach. A very tough one to stomach.
Yes.
We got a big day on the program tomorrow. A lot of fun football coming up this weekend. So we'll have Eric Kane on the show tomorrow from VolQuest. We'll have TD with us tomorrow as well, looking ahead to the Titans and the Patriots. So a lot of stuff coming up.
TD right now.
TD's right now. He's with Jake Lyman. Coming up next. That does it for us. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Next man up with Jake Lyman and TD is next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.